Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Monday, January 16th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. I'm not a cardiologist, but if you just open up a little bit, you send me an email, we'll discuss it. I can read it on the air. I can give you advice. There's certain things I can give advice on, but yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what. You can email the show if you have topics that you want me to discuss or anything you want. You can share your thoughts with me. I'm cool with that. All right. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 202. I have a special guest, comedian John Moses out of Canada. Right, I think John is probably the first, it's probably the first foreigner that I've had on the show. And maybe that's, in 4 years, he's probably the first one. I had people of different ethnicities on the show, but I think they were all born in the United States. So this is a first. See, in 2017, I'm being more inclusive. I'm having immigrants on the show. I think John will get a kick out of this. But John's a terrific comedian out of Canada, Toronto area, by way of Boston. And I'll be sharing that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I am celebrating my MLK junior holiday. What am I going to do? I might rent a movie on demand. I'm just going to chill. I was doing some shows at Levity Live, the great home club Levity Live in West Nyack, New York, emceeing for Brad Williams, LA comic, and Rojo Perez featured. A really great weekend. He sold out all those shows. I think he pretty much sold out at least 5 of the 6, if not all. And it was a great time. And I was starting my sets off. I was like, woo, 3-day weekend. And I was like, none of you probably care what MLK stand for. You just know you get a day off. What MLK stood for as a person, or we probably forgot, or we lost sight of it because of the election. And I just like riffed on that and had a good time. I had a good time, really fun time hosting those shows, honing the material, because I want to do an album this year, honing it, feeling really good about it in front of a sold-out crowd, and then experimenting a little bit, riffing, being more lucid, all the shit that you've heard me nerd out about the past couple years. So had a great time working with him, and so I hope everybody's maybe you're taking the MLK Day to reflect, or just to rest if you've been working hard. Rest. I think MLK would have liked you to rest if you've been working your ass off and taking a day to chill in his name. And maybe you just don't make shitty flyers and have for club shows, you know, like just like club promo with the shitty MLK Jr. flyers. Maybe let's not do that. But other than that, have a good time. Hope everybody is doing that. A couple things. Really, really cool big news. I didn't share it with you last week because it was just kind of fresh. But I tell you when I do cool things, and I tell you when I bomb and stuff. This past week, I did an episode of the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, the Netflix show created by Tina Fey, and it was really cool. I found out that I booked it. This week would make it almost 2 weeks ago. So I booked it on a Friday, the first week of the year. oh God, when did I? I'm looking. Let me look at the calendar. Yeah, it was. So yeah, it was pretty much the first week of the year, and I booked the show, and then this last Thursday, the 12th, I shot the episode. It was really cool. It was pretty. It was a humbling experience. I cried in the car when I found out. The car was parked when I was talking to my manager, and I cried on the phone with my parents. My dad cried a little bit. My mom was like, "You two pussies, stop crying." And it was really cool. So I'll just take you through the day. Like, so last week, maybe a couple days before the shoot, I was scheduled to have a wardrobe fitting in Midtown, like Park Avenue, and that where they were shooting a scene. And I went to the wardrobe truck. Like, I don't know if you live in New York and you see all those like those Haddad honey wagon trucks and all the big trucks, and you know somebody's shooting something. And it was pretty surreal to go in there, and you go into this wardrobe truck, and you get, you know, the costume designers fitting you and clothes, and you give them your measurements once you book the role and all that, and you do your fitting. And so that was pretty surreal in and of itself. Like, finally, actually, you know, going to shows where you get paid in bar and like drink tickets, and you see these other people filming stuff, and then it's your turn to actually go into one of these things. And it was really, that was neat. And Thursday, I shot a scene as a congregation member. It's if they use it, it's a blink and you'll miss me type thing, but you'll say, wow, Chris was in the thing. That was Chris. I know that guy. And it's really cool. It was, and so you might hear me say amen or praise Jesus or something to that nature. And it was cool because the scene was about, if you watch the show, I don't know, Kimmy goes to, I guess maybe the episode will be Kimmy Goes to Church. I don't know. It was really cool. I got to see Ellie Kemper and Titus Burgess, the stars of the show. Got to see them work on scenes, and it was funny as fuck. And Tina Fey was there, which I was hoping she would be there. And I gotta say, she's fucking gorgeous in just like street clothes, chill. And you see her, I got to see her like run the set a little bit. So it was really awesome and surreal. And I will never forget that moment. I will never forget that day. That was really fucking cool to work as long as I've worked, and to get like something like that, a really cool credit. On a really popular show, a classic show, which will eventually be a classic show. So it was really awesome, because that was one of the goals. That was one of the goals for this year, was to book one line or a co-starring role on a TV show. And I hope there's more to come. And I just found out this past week that I got a part in a movie starring Melissa McCarthy. So I'm excited about that too. I don't know how much I can tell on that, but I'm that's all that I got for now. And I'm the scene that I have is with her, so I'm really excited about that. So things are happening 2017. Let's hope that this is the first of many, and I can just push on and pay some bills and not be poor as much. So it's just, maybe this is a good thing. Maybe we can just pay some bills off this shit. So to keep my head above water and make a way when I can without temporary layoffs. Good times. All right, so let me give you a couple movie reviews, and we'll get to John. The episode's kind of, my conversation with John was a little short, so maybe we'll try to make this intro as robust as possible. It was a short conversation, but it was a really fun, cool one. So let me get to this. So I saw two movies this past week. I saw Lion, starring Dev Patel and Rooney Mara. So I will read you the Google synopsis as always. Here we go. 5-year-old Saru gets lost on a train which takes him thousands of miles across India, away from home and family. Saru must learn to survive alone in Kolkata before ultimately being adopted by an Australian couple. 25 years later, armed with only a handful of memories, his unwavering determination and revolutionary technology known as Google Earth, he sets out to find his lost family and finally return to his first home. All right, so this came out, they say it came out in November, and I guess it did. And Dev Patel got nominated for Best Supporting Actor, which I don't fucking understand, because he's the lead in the movie. I don't know if they're trying to make that boy, the little younger version of Saru, the lead. I don't know what they're doing with this, but to me, it seems like he was clearly the lead. This movie was really good. I was kind of felt like this was a chore to watch for me, because it was one of those, obviously, like awards contending movies. And I was like, do I want to see it? This is going to be depressing. And one of my homegirls gave me a movie pass, two movie passes actually, for Bowtie Cinema. So after work last Thursday, I had to work on some a rehearsal for a thing that I'm working on, and so I said, okay, I got time to kill. I'll go see it. So I went to see it, and it was really fucking good. The homie JL Covan said that he really liked it, and he said that the little kid did more running than Tom Cruise has ever done. I don't know how much that's true, but that was, I think maybe he was speaking in hyperbole, but it was really, really good. I got emotional a couple times, like especially towards the end. Dev Patel, terrific actor. He's been doing it for a while. I think, was he the Slumdog Millionaire guy? I feel like he was. Yeah, 2008 Slumdog Millionaire, The Last Airbender. So he's been doing it for a minute. He's a young dude, he's like 26, but he's terrific. And this guy, so he's not only a great actor, his hair in Lion, my God. I mean, he had some luxurious curls. So there were, like I said, there were two moments that I cried. I didn't cry. At the end, and he cuts his hair towards the end of the movie. I was like, damn, why'd you cut the locks off? You know, he looked like Indian Jesus, man. Like, it was great. So that, I think, Dev Patel's hair in Lion better than Denzel's waves in The Magnificent Seven. Because Denzel didn't really showcase his waves as much as Dev did in Lion. I mean, Dev had his shit on display. Denzel, you only saw it, like, really one time, you know? And that one time was amazing, but, you know, Dev Patel had his shit on display. So I highly recommend Lion if you're looking for something, like, a heavy, like, a really good film. Just a really, it packs an emotional wallop, and it just is building up, and it's just like, oh my God, it's really, really good. And so I saw that, really, I liked it, I recommend it. I don't know why, I have to ask somebody that really knows this, but I don't get why he wasn't nominated for Best Actor. It's weird, because he's the lead in the movie. I don't know, he's the protagonist. Friday, I had Friday off, and I went to the movies. I said, you know what? I want to see this new Jamie Foxx movie, Sleepless. And basically, on the internet, this is essentially Black Taken. So I reached out, and some people try to say Blaken, but or Blacken. No, that doesn't work. Okay, so here's the Google synopsis, a Google description. Undercover Las Vegas police officer Vincent Downs, Jamie Foxx, finds himself caught in a high-stakes web of corrupt cops, internal affairs, and murderous gangsters when a failed heist leads to the kidnapping of his teenage son, Octavius J. Johnson. Downs must race against time during a wild and restless night to save him and bring the criminals to justice. So this movie got 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. Fuck that. I enjoyed it. If we can go see Liam Neeson beat up people for taking his daughter or his kid, we can watch Jamie Foxx, Black Lives Matter, and we can enjoy this movie. I thought it was a good, it's one of those January movies that they just kind of dump off on you. They don't know if it's going to do well. They know we got a star in the movie, Oscar winner, and you know, we're going to see what it does. And it was entertaining. Like, it's something that, it's not something you need to rush out and go see. If you're kind of like me and you're a movie nerd, you probably want to catch all the Oscar movies, the award movies, before the Oscars happen. But if there's something you just want to watch for fun and have a good time, this is a movie. It's like a little intrigue, couple of plot twists. There were a couple moments where I was like, oh, fuck. Is this going to happen? Is this? Oh, God. And it was just like, all right. But my one gripe about this movie, I didn't really care for the kid. I don't know if that kid was just annoying. Most kids in movies are bratty, but it was just something about this kid that was just kind of like, I was like, eh. And he's a Maryland guy, this guy, Octavius. He was on, what was he on? He was on Ray Donovan, and he was a little annoying in that. And his character got killed. I don't know. But what are you gonna do? But he was fine. He was just a little too annoying to really, and I just kind of didn't care. I don't know that I cared too much about him, and so I was just like, And Gabrielle Union's in it. Why would you? And yeah, there were a couple moments where I was like, oh no, like there was like not like oh no, like this sucks, but it was just like, oh no, why are you getting into this situation when you really don't need to be? But I see why, it's script wise, and I see because of what your character, who you are as a celebrity, why you need to be in this particular moment. But I was afraid, I was nervous because I didn't want anything to happen to you. That's how I felt. So I was invested in the movie, and it was just fucking fun. It was a fun movie. So if when this movie comes out in March on demand or Redbox, you can rent this movie and be like, all right, I liked it. And shout out to the homie Rod from The Black Guy Who Tips. He hit me up to do a spoiled movie review. I don't know if I told you guys, I did if you're a premium member on with The Black Guy Who Tips, I did a spoiled movie review of Hello, My Name is Doris and La La Land. So if you're a premium subscriber to The Black Guy Who Tips, you can check that out. They wanted me to do one for Sleepless, but I was about to do a show and I couldn't rock with them, but maybe another time. But yeah, Sleepless, solid movie. Oh, also wanted to, well, it's not done yet, but I posted some pictures if you follow me on Instagram. I'm working on this short film with Andrew Short, Reed Failer, and Adam Wirtz. And I was working on that Sunday, so I posted a couple pics that from that. And once that comes out, it's a short film called Hot Red Leather. And I filmed that all day yesterday and then did the show. So shout out to those guys. I can't wait to see how it comes out. They seem to be excited about it. So that makes me excited too. So when that comes out, I'll definitely share it with you. All right, I think that's it. I think this week I might try to get some movies in. I might try to see The Founder, and I might about the Michael Keaton movie about Ray Kroc, the guy that kind of discovered McDonald's, or the guy that took McDonald's to the level where it's at now. I hope to do it, and maybe Split, because it's got some young starlets that I'm excited about. So, all right, so let's get to John Moses. Why don't we just get to John Moses? John Moses, really funny comic. I guess I would say I think I met him through J.L. Covan. I just kind of met him through that, and then we did like shows together at Levity quite a few times. And he's just a really fun dude, interesting guy to talk to. This is obviously a shorter episode, a shorter conversation than I normally have, but we were together opening for Joe Matarese right before Christmas, and we just decided to knock one out. And maybe I'll have him on again, just to get a more in-depth conversation with him. But this was a great chat that we have. So this is my conversation with the very funny and talented John Moses. So it's Friday night. There's no NBA on because of the fucking meaningless bowl games.
Oh, is that what it is? I just thought it was because the NBA couldn't put a schedule together because they're going so heavy Christmas Day.
I think it's probably that too.
But right.
The older I get, the more disenfranchised or dispassionate I become about college sports, college football.
I'm from Canada. I don't give a fuck about college sports.
Yeah.
I'll watch the Final Four or I'll watch the Sweet 16 if there's like an underdog that's making noise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when Jimmer was, you know, banging out shots.
when promising white talent.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. The underdog.
Yeah, isn't he like going like, what is it, the D League for like the Knicks or something?
I thought he was playing somewhere, but he was like, you know, 11th off the bench.
Yeah, then he went down to
maybe
the
chuck a three. He should just go to Asia and be a dynamo.
Yeah, they're dudes that I went to high school with, and they played over there. Like a guys that I went to college with that play overseas and have careers. Like they,
yeah. My buddy should have did that. He was like an okay high school player, but he could have went over there and been an Asian god.
Like Stephon Marbury?
Yeah. He wasn't quite Stephon Marbury good, but yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I don't think he's ever coming back.
Yeah.
He's never coming back.
Yeah, why would he? He's acclimated. He probably knows 15 to 50 Chinese words that'll get him around.
Yeah.
You know?
They worship him. They did like this.
They're making Starburys in the old Jordan factory.
Are they?
Yeah, he's making his shoes in the old Jordan, in a factory where they used to make Jordans.
Is it like slave labor? Or
definitely.
Do they have PTO days?
I mean, that's probably, it's probably middle America.
Okay.
There, but it would be like slave labor wages here, like $3 a week or something.
Oh, shit.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But those Trump jobs are never coming back, so.
Yeah, I don't think they're. I think the people that are going to be surprised the most are those working class people that felt
like. Oh, yeah.
Because I said this, like, and I tweeted this, John. I said the day after the election, his campaign was like lemonade for racist people or for the disenfranchised, like people that felt like they lost something because of Obama being in office. And he's, you know.
Well, I do think of a great failing of the Democratic Party was that they just left working class white people behind. And whenever you turn on CNN, you're always hearing about like white male privilege. And you just can't tell people. And I voted for Hillary, by the way. But you just can't tell people whose lives are continually getting shittier.
Yeah.
You know, who went from like a good factory job to a Walmart greeter and whose family's addicted to meth.
Yeah.
That they should be thanking their lucky stars that they're white.
Yeah, because you're seeing.
So, like, my life has gotten way shittier, man. I don't care what you think about whatever ceiling.
Right. I think being a minority, you would think it would be easier to have empathy for the plight of others. So, I mean, to me, it just comes as like that's inherent. Like, so when I see people that are poor or, you know, whatever, I just see, like, it's fucked up. And it's something that this country doesn't have when it comes to a lot of these issues. It's just empathy. Like, people just not giving a fuck. Like, they think, oh, I'm going to be okay. I got money.
That's
I'm
it.
Rich. I'm
going
to be all right. I got insurance.
Right.
I was talking to somebody yesterday who was saying, like, oh, you know, like, I have my job. I get a raise every year and a half or whatever. But my premiums for my insurance goes up.
Yep.
And so you think, like, I'm making more money, but why is my check getting
shorter? It's getting whacked, right?
Yeah, so.
I think everybody, and you could say, like, those white Republicans in the middle of the country that are, who already have all the rights, like, their only issue is jobs, and then, like, you know, security, you know, based on whatever fear Fox News is able to monger, you know, so it's like, and you could say like, oh, well, they're single issue voters or whatever, but everybody kind of votes to their interests anyway,
of course. Yeah.
Like, or at least they should. I mean, not enough black people in Detroit showed up and voted for Hillary or they went to Michigan.
There's voter suppression. Did she even go there? Where didn't she go?
Is that she started getting cocky and doing victory laps.
Yeah.
Like they went to Arizona. to campaign. And they're like, oh, what the hell? And they hadn't won in Arizona in 30 years. Like, they took their foot off the gas and off the throat. And look what happened. But there were people saying, listen, you better get your ass over to Michigan and figure this thing out. But back to what I was saying, it's like black people care about black rights first and foremost because they're feeling, rightfully so, I don't know if disenfranchised is the right word, but you know, you're seeing people getting shot by fucking cops and you know, other things, you know, affecting that community. Social programs just being gutted left, right, and center. Girls and boys clubs going down. All that stuff, right? So that's important to them. Cool. You know, gay guys think about gay rights. Or gay people think about gay rights. You know who doesn't give a fuck about gay rights? Black people that aren't gay.
Well, I think it's just the way that I grew up. I grew up in, like, both my parents had jobs. My dad had two jobs. My mother actually made more than my dad. And, you know, he got another. They were laborers. And they put me through Catholic school. And, like, I've said on the show before, like, I'm kind of like, I don't know if this reference would work with you, like the black Kevin Arnold from the Wonder Years. You probably didn't. Did you grow up with that?
A little bit. I watched a little bit. I know who Winnie is.
Yeah, hell yeah. She's like a brainiac mathematician. But that's sort of like that middle class.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, you know, that sort of thing. And I saw my parents vote all the time. Because, you know, you're a kid, like, you're standing in line with your dad, like, voting. Mm-hmm. And, like, did you vote? So that was just kind of like, it's a civic duty. And then, you know, so I just always thought, in college I was involved in government and stuff. I interned at a state legislature when I believed in shit, you know,
right.
I was kind of like passionate about.
Yeah, when you were in college and you thought, you know, you can make a difference.
Yeah, and it's just like you kind of interested in that. And it was cool, but it was just sort of like, well, then there's these other people that have interests, these lobbyists, these things. And I'm kind of like getting into territory where that I don't know much about, and I'm not going to pretend. But I think overall, it's just like, it seemed, you know, we talk about the lesser of two evils. We talk about, it just seemed like she was the most qualified.
Oh my God. And it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
I remember in May or June, whatever it was, their strategy was to suppress the vote. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that sounded so ridiculous. I was like, what a terrible, like, it's almost like giving up. You know, like, we know that we can't, you know, based on, you know, the things that we want to push, that it's not popular, and we're only going to win these white people. But if we can just suppress the vote of enough of the other interests, then maybe we can win this thing. And I just thought, you are done. You are done. But lo and behold, they did a fantastic job of doing that.
Yeah, I just feel like, who, the Republicans?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I was listening to some friends talk.
And Putin.
Yeah, but see, I think that plays a part, but then it's a lot of people that didn't vote. Like, they felt like, oh, Hillary's going to win, or they...
But that's, I think some of that's from the vote suppression.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're saying because Hillary's going to win.
They think, so my vote doesn't count, I'm not going to vote.
See, I didn't vote for Obama in New York because I was like, he's clearly going to win.
So what did you do? Jersey?
Didn't vote.
Oh, you just didn't vote?
No, I didn't vote.
So you have I'm assuming you have your citizenship.
Yeah, I voted for... John Kerry.
Okay.
You know, and he lost, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I didn't vote in either of the Obama elections because it just looked like he was gonna
win.
Steamroll the thing. And I was in New York. I was like, there's no way he's going to lose New York. I voted for Hillary this time around just to... I thought she was going to run away with it too, but I was just like, let me go and vote. And my wife was all gung ho, and I got a little girl now, and I was like, first woman president, sure, you know.
Now, what was your first?
My county also, even though New Jersey, I think went
New Jersey to, won. She won it,
but my county went 63% Republican.
Oh, okay.
You know, a lot of Trump signs popping up.
And see, what I want to get to, I want to get back to that, but you, what was your first election? Was it the Kerry, Bush, Kerry Bush? Was that 2000 or 2004?
I don't even know. No, 2004. 2004.
Yeah. And one of the things, I don't know if it was Gore or Kerry, but I just remember somebody on some news channel was just like, they didn't have, like, charisma. Like, there
Gore.
Was no, like, it was Gore. It was just like, And I just and today I was listening to a podcast and they said like liberals don't have a backbone, like they fold all the time.
Right. Meanwhile, these are the guys. You know, it's always these are the guys that serve in the army.
Yeah.
You know, like Kerry served. Mm-hmm. You know, but they were you know banging on him because he came back and spoke out against the war. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, George Bush does whatever deferments he can because he's from a rich family. You know.
Yeah. And it was just like
they're just better at throwing garbage, man.
It was just like. You like these guys? They're deplorables,
right?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
like no. They are. This is what I think they are. Just say it. Don't you know? I don't know, man.
This guy's talking crazy nonsense, and you got to backpedal on deplorables. This guy doesn't back up on deporting Mexicans and calling them rapists, and you say deplorables, and you're like, I've misspoken.
Yeah, it's like I'm sorry.
Yeah, stand up for it.
Yeah, he just
dig in.
He just
I've felt an obligation since the election, or even leading up to the election. Because I'm a white trash scumbag, to really be a vocal white trash scumbag liberal. Mm. To just show that these people that you can be that.
Yeah.
You know, you can be a racist liberal.
Right. I think we all are to a certain degree.
Yeah, well, you know, check out my album if you want to hear further
I heard
details
it.
On that.
Upper middle trash.
Yes. I'm talking about your people, the people listening.
I'm guessing like, you know, because when I think about it, What took me was the fact, like, so in Rockland County, I live in Bergen County. I'm like, the route that I go to my day job, you go up like 9W and you see these houses and different types of, you know, you're suburban New Jersey. And I've seen more Trump signs. I saw more Trump signs than Hillary signs, mm-hmm. even though she won New York and New Jersey. It was just kind of like, something was kind of ominous.
Yeah,
and this summer, I was down in, my listeners know this, but I was down in rural Virginia for a family reunion.
Me too.
And I was just like, they're
not your family reunion. Yeah. I was doing a club.
Oh, what club?
Cozy's.
Where is that at?
Newport News.
Oh, shit. That's not rural.
That's not rural?
No. That's like where Michael Vick is from. That's like, was it kind of.
I'll tell you what.
Was it rural?
Oh, when you say rural.
Everything I'm talking that's about not trailer like, park shit.
Oh yeah, yeah. Anything that's like less than 100,000 people is rural to me. But
oh, okay, that's just like
that was just a bummy town. But
Newport News is like to me. My uncle lives there, and it's like I remember when I was a kid. It's just like anywhere USA.
Yeah,
I remember like just being. Oh, you guys got all the stores, like all your Best Buy, or like all your fucking like. Stores that you
know. Golden Corrals.
Yeah, everything. And it's just like, because I remember I was in Williamsburg this past summer, Williamsburg, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
I was like, why do you have all these fucking pancake houses? Like, what the fuck? Like,
why do you need that many pancake houses?
And I think I remember my uncle telling me, because it's like a port town and like that whole area, it's just like they test things out there.
Huh.
Like, it's like they test stuff out to see if they're going to move it. To another region.
Ah.
That's what
so like an IHOP will. Oh, that's interesting.
Because there was this is some fat boy shit, but like Fuddruckers.
Believe me, I eat way fatter than I am, and I'm getting fat.
Yeah.
But I like people watch me eat, and they're like, dude, why aren't you 300 pounds? And it's like, I have a miraculous.
Lucky you. I gotta get rid of mine.
Yeah. Digestive system.
Fuddruckers is one of my favorite, favorite like burger places.
Whenever I was at Comics in a thing I would always
Foxwoods?
I would always dump $20 there.
Yeah. Like it's so they had so we went to Fuddruckers maybe like last year and it was a Fuddruckers where it was kinda like a dine in. It was like a
upscale
Fuddruckers. Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Like you pay for your food.
What the
you
fuck wait. Is this?
Fuck is this shit?
Fuddruckers?
Yeah. So it was different. It was like a new thing that they were doing. So that maybe I was like, okay. Anyway. Where the fuck was I? Rural Virginia, trailer park shit, Trump signs. Like, you like, don't you know that he doesn't give a fuck about you?
I know.
Like, they don't give a shit, and
but they, you know what? But they wanted to believe in something,
right?
You know, I do think that you know some of the through line for some of those people in the Rust Belt that went, and a lot of those swing states that you know once voted for Obama is that they wanted to believe in something, and with Obama it was hope, and with.
Yeah.
With Trump, it was changed, like something, please.
Hillary was
you know,
like,
we're
more
still
this
not getting, you know, it's still getting worse. Jobs are still pouring out of here.
Yeah.
And Trump was like, well, we're going to patch up the dam and keep jobs in America, even though he has no real plan to do it. I just don't think you, like, economically it can happen, you know? Like, and then automation is going to destroy jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Uber, Amazon Delivery.
Yeah.
All these, like, there's these big companies that are just going to destroy jobs. But I was in Virginia, too, and there was a lot of Trump bumper stickers. And right beside the Trump bumper sticker, more than one car, I saw marriage is girl bathroom sign plus boy bathroom sign. And I was like, why do you care?
Yeah,
you
know? Like, yeah.
Why do you care?
It's, yeah.
I was in Oklahoma, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is supposed to be like their Austin, you know? So okay. Like their liberal stronghold in Oklahoma. Yeah. And I was doing shows maybe 5 weeks before the election. And I didn't, on a Wednesday night, maybe there was 20 people the first show. Mm-hmm. I dropped big. And I asked, and I was like, okay, how about any Hillary supporters? And of the 20 people, there was a lesbian couple. And mm-hmm. 18 of the people clapped for Trump. No, Trump. Ah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lesbian couple said, Gary Johnson.
Okay.
And I was like she couldn't even pull gay people in Oklahoma, right?
It's like,
and then I should say, like, I want to tell you, I started every show from that point on. I did 5 more shows. I came out to Hulk Hogan's "I'm a Real American," and I was chanting, fist pumping, going up on stage, going "Hillary, Hillary, Hillary," just to like get the place all raucous. And it was like a WWE match.
They're yelling.
People were
shit.
Booing, and other people are going, "Yeah!" And like lots of people were laughing, you know.
So you didn't mind starting with that type of energy. You liked it.
No, I love. To me, it's just funny.
Yeah.
So I would do that. Like I would come up to New York and I would do shows and I go Trump, 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 just to get under people's skin. Anyway, I was asked not to come back to that club.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you were you polarizing or?
I don't know. Not at all. I had a lot of fun, but I just think the owners there were like, you know, they sent me an email and they're like, John, you know, the crowds weren't really getting you, and I was like, dude, I had some fun shows. I don't think that's true. You know,
mm-hmm.
and some people were coming out because slowly but surely, like there's some people who have heard like stuff on Pandora and Spotify and Sirius. Like they hear my the albums are trickling out there, and like the last couple cities I've been in, a few people have come out. So I feel like in another 10 years, maybe I'll start getting 10 people a show that come out to see me specifically.
Well, what you're speaking to indirectly is it something that a lot of people don't get to experience, the fact that you travel a lot around the country and you get to see these things. When he won, like, I don't want a Monday morning quarterback it, but it's kind of like you could kind of see the writing on the wall.
Uh-huh.
Even if you travel, I've said this so many times, even if you travel minutes away from Manhattan,
just drive,
you just see that shit.
Drive to Buffalo.
Yeah.
I remember after Obama won the first time, I was driving home to Toronto, and I was driving through upstate New York, and there were signs on people's lawn saying Sarah Palin for president 2012. I was like, are you mentally retarded?
Yeah.
Like, you got to get out of Manhattan to experience this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just such a cultural difference down there.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to this dude, worked the door at the place, nice guy, Jerome. You know, country,
Asian guy?
Yes.
Okay.
A country black dude, and you know, he was saying, hey, did you hear that story about that guy that got like his head cut off on the bus? And I was like, no, like something had happened similarly in Canada, but I guess somebody got decapitated riding on a Greyhound.
Jesus.
Yeah, just fly, people, get it together.
Fuck.
You know, if you're so poor that you got to take the bus 8 hours to see your family, maybe just Skype them. But he said, no, this guy cut some guy's head off. And he goes, you know what, man, that's why all bus, you know, they should let bus drivers carry guns. And I'm like, that's the solution to this?
Good.
It's like, dude, you want more of these maniacs armed? Like, you just saw a kid get shot for, what's the thing in Florida?
His music being too loud?
No. The Stand Your Ground Law, George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you just, like, a kid got killed and they were able to skate on that for some Stand Your Ground. You want more armed people, but it's just such a, like, more armed bus drivers who, you know, who are afraid and get like a little bit, oh, God, you know, like,
right.
You know?
It's true. It's true.
But it's such a cultural thing down there. Like, they don't see the gun as a problem. They see the gun as a solution.
Yeah.
And it has been inbred in them, and it is going to take generations to undo that because it's taken generations to get to that point.
Yeah.
So when Hillary Clinton's like, we need to revive these gun laws, they're like, chill out.
Yeah.
I loved everything that Bernie Sanders said, but I just never thought any of it was practical or pragmatic. You know, I was like, dude, you got to focus on one of these things. Free college, free healthcare for everybody. I'm from Canada. The healthcare system up there is so much better than they get credit for here in the American media. It's ridiculous.
I thought they...
But I did not... But I knew that Bernie Sanders couldn't get healthcare passed because Obama tried, and he said, listen, like, it's just too much of a huge system to overhaul. You have to make incremental progress, you know?
It was the same as Mitt. The same shit that Mitt had, right?
Yeah. And by the way, that system there apparently is great. You get a penalty. I remember getting an extra $750 penalty because I didn't have health insurance while I was living in Massachusetts. But now I was talking to a friend who lives there. Their premiums are so much lower than what I pay in New Jersey.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's because, you know, they've laid the groundwork and they've been working on it, but, you know.
I have it through my job, but I just these, like, the schism between all these parties, it's so funny to me because, to me, the shit is just like pro wrestling.
It really is.
Like, they'll, like, oh, fuck you, this guy, ah. And then they go out, like, they'll go on they'll go on Fox News, they'll debate, they'll go on MSNBC, they'll debate, and then they go eat steaks together.
Oh, yeah, they go eat steaks together, yeah. So,
watch baseball games.
What bills are going to get passed? Oh, really? Should I buy that, you know, that rack of land over there where we're going to develop a new power plant? It's like inside trading to the 10th power.
They're all friends, and then the people that get fucked are just the regular people.
Yeah.
And they want to argue these different, you know, platforms, so it's just kind of like it's a big clusterfuck that I kind of understand, and then it's just like it's just another big soap opera. It's like trying to get into a comic book series when it's like 50 years in.
Good analogy.
Yeah, it's just like,
how do we remember we wanted to talk about why I hate Kevin Durant. We pivoted hard. We just went down that path, and we were like, oh, this is it now.
Political chat. with two
guys who don't know enough to be talking about fucking politics.
No, I don't know shit.
Yo, ask me why I hate Tig Notaro. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I do hate her, but let's not get into it. Oh. I don't even hate her. I don't know her, but her comedy sucks. But anyway.
She's pretty nice. I did a festival.
Oh, I hope so. When you're not that funny, you better be nice. Okay, moving on.
So you hate Kevin Durant?
I was just like so mad about why he moved. We were talking about that because the Christmas game. I'm excited to see this Christmas game. It looks like I'm not going to get a chance to see it because I'm like taking my kid. My wife has signed me up for caroling or something
with my daughter
at some old age home.
Oh,
yeah, just real white shit. And But I wanted to see the game, and I hate that fact that Kevin Durant went to the 73 team. I hate it when LeBron left.
Left
Cleveland. Like, not really knowing, like, how shitty his team was.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
It was really bad.
And, you know, and it's evident by, like, when he left how decimated they were. Like, they went from, like, a 65-win season to a 20-win season.
They didn't do anything to help. Carlos Boozer, Antoine Jameson.
I know. Boozer was like a... who seemed awesome, was a straight bum when he went anywhere else, you know?
Yeah, it just... Because to me, the worst thing that he had done...
Was Boozer on Cleveland? I thought he was in Chicago.
You know what? One of those light-skinned dudes.
Varejao is even worse.
No.
Oh, Gooden.
Drew Gooden. See, I'm fucking up. Yeah. Jameson's the guy. Well... the worst thing he had done before that was not shake like Orlando Magic's team when they beat him. Like,
uh-huh.
And so I was just like, okay. And then he did the decision, and he made $3 million for Boys and Girls Club.
You're right. Which I'm sure I heard that at some point, but totally forgot about it. Yeah. Still pretty great.
And so
I love LeBron, by the way. He's one of my like modern day heroes. Yeah. Just the amount of charitable stuff that he does, and like, you know, how he comes out and speaks his mind, and how he was got behind Hillary, like all that stuff was like, it's obviously not financially motivated.
Yeah,
you know, I love LeBron.
Yeah,
when he did the decision, I was like, upset. Oh, come on, man, that was, you know, it sucked.
I just, you know,
I was rooting against him.
What shifted for me is why I don't care anymore. I don't care about that loyalty shit, because when I grew up, now, I was fortunate, like, I grew up to watch Cal Ripken Jr. play in the same uniform his whole career.
Right.
And so that shift happened for me, like.
And where'd you grow up?
In Maryland, Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's
area.
Big then. Right.
So it's like you see this guy in a jersey his whole career, and that's cool. 11, 12 years old.
Keeping an eye on the time. Yeah. We're doing this at a comedy show.
Yeah, we're both.
We're in the green room on Levity Live, and somebody else is headlining, and we're doing this while he headlines.
Well, I told Anthony to come get it. I said, we're going to be podcasting. Oh, okay, when you're good. About to light him, let me know.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. So,
we'll wrap it up quickly. So
Fourth wall shit.
Yes.
Behind the fourth wall. Mm. I saw Joe Montana in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform, and it was never the same. So it's like one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time is in another uniform.
Yeah.
If it can happen to him and it happened to Jordan, it can happen to anybody. So, like, yeah. I was already just.
I don't even think about Jordan on the Wizards when I think about Jordan.
A lot of people don't.
You know?
That was the only time I got to see him live.
Remember that hitch dunk when he went up for that dunk? I don't know if it happened more than once. I just remember him going up for a dunk and he got jammed. Jordan got jammed on the rim, and I was just like, ugh, hang it up.
I was listening to, I think it was Lebatard or someone said that he did that so he could become an owner, and it worked out.
Right.
So he was trying to revitalize DC. He was the catalyst to revitalize DC because they built that arena. They built up around like Chinatown and DC, and it's thriving now.
Big business move.
Yeah. So he did it. He did a lot. You know.
I respect that.
Yeah.
But, and the other thing is like, you know how everybody's like, Jordan never does nothing for black people.
Yeah, people say that. Like he wasn't.
Hey man, fuck off, man. Like the guy. What's he supposed to do? Like he does, even though he made that Republicans Buy Shoes 2 comment or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he employs, like when you I read a couple of articles and it says like he employs a ton of minorities and makes sure that people get, you know, pushed ahead and, you know, whether you believe that the best person for the job should, you know, whatever.
I'm sure
that's
he
a different
does.
Conversation,
like, you know,
but the guy does, he does great. He does great by people.
It's nice.
He's an asshole, but.
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't think he's obligated to do it, but it's nice when they do.
Right.
Like they can't all be LeBron James, but it is nice when you see those guys. It was funny. I think I was talking to a comedian.
Let me tell you about beauty of being white.
Okay.
Is I don't owe any white people shit.
You don't know any white people shit?
No, I don't owe them shit. Like when I succeed, nobody's like, now it's time for you to help out some other white people.
You have the luxury of just being an individual.
Yeah, I could just care about my fucking family and my friends and the people I love, and everybody else can fuck off.
It's just sort of like, I think Bill Burr said it, where it's like if a white guy is just like, I don't know. That's just him. You're like that's just that guy. It's not me. Like I'm a fuck up, or this guy is not. And you all, I don't know. You probably always hear black people. We're not a monolith. You know, a monolith. Like we're not.
That's the
all
first time
the
I've
same.
Ever heard that. But oh, I know what you're talking about.
It's a thing. Like it's just like
it makes me think of that episode of Star Trek. Like we are Borg.
Right. It's like you're not. We're not all the same. So it's just like we're different. Just like
that is a very. Good example of you growing up in a nice middle class family. Like we're not a monolith. Like
no, it's just
I've never met any black people that say that, knowing exactly what you mean. It's like oh,
it's
no, I've
a
never
real
heard
like. See,
I've heard. I'm not a representative of all black people, motherfucker.
Yeah, I mean, well, I had a little education on me, man. You know, I can't. I'm not ever going to.
Maybe the first time I've heard monolith in a sentence. Now that I think of it,
I think I probably heard it from like.
Studying in the theater.
That probably, but like listening to like my early college days, like is when like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Where'd you go, Howard?
No.
I'm totally kidding.
I went to,
the no. way you said no was like,
no, it's not that. Options, it's John. Because, you know what it was? No, that's a shit. A lot of people that went to HBCUs are doing fucking phenomenal.
Awesome.
Like they're like.
Is that because like they're within a. What's the fraternity? And it's like everybody's got their financial backing. Like it's a little bit of an old boys club within the historical black colleges.
That could be part of it, but I think it just seems like.
I mean, it's all. Like, I'm just like when you go to Yale and Princeton and all that shit. You know, a part of the reason you're dying to get in there is because you're a part of the alumni,
the Yale mafia.
And the fraternity and the Yale mafia, and it's like boom, you're paths already charted out, so I would hope so.
I think so to a certain degree, but I think, I mean, just like they are, a lot of them are really good schools.
Yeah,
like you know, and these people like just people that I know that are doing really well. Like
much better than you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I went to a liberal arts school.
I know so many people who are doing much better than me, and I'm I don't want to say I'm so much smarter than them, but
yeah.
There was a time where if you were going to pick me or them, but then I chose to do comedy, and that was the failing.
Yeah, you know, like my best friend.
I should have been installing kitchens.
You make money in that, dude.
Fucking right.
You'd be, because they're always going to need it. Like, that's why I was looking at
white
this.
People in their disposable income. I'd be making, you know, you do 10 kitchens a year, you make $500,000.
Wow. Anyway. That's amazing. Like, but it's like if you know how to do work on cars, you know how to do like labor, like the construction, you can stay in money.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, where was I going with that?
Who knows? This thing's all over the place.
But that's how it's fine. It's good. It's entertaining.
No, this is great.
This is a good-ass podcast.
This is a very good, free-flowing, yeah. There's too many times where I get, you know, roped into talking about getting drunk and punching people out, so I'm glad
to be
stepping outside of that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Stepping outside of that little box.
What I like to go for, like, the arrogance in me as a podcast host, I would like to say, like, when you're on my show, it's a definitive John Moses podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if you when you're on my show, it's like, oh, I never heard him like that, or this
perfect.
Is like
no,
this is like I try to.
Well, then I would say you are doing that. You are following.
Oh, good.
That.
So we'll get 30 listens on this.
Great.
So but no,
I've never heard him speak like that before, or in general.
Yeah, yeah. I think. I don't know, man. But I think there is a fraternity. But I think when you're black, you have to be, or any type of minority. But I can only speak from this black perspective. But
sure.
It's just to have an awareness of what you come in
the community at large.
The community at large.
Which is why like Obama's presidency, it's so much more impressive to me.
Yeah.
Not so much more impressive to me, but like if he was fucking around, you'd know,
right?
You know, and I feel like he can't, because it's like he just can't. It's not only that he can't let his family down; it's like he can't let black people down because he's going to be held to a much higher standard.
You are, yeah. You know? It's like I remember on Scandal when I used to watch it. It was like the one character he was telling his daughter, the lead girl. What's it? I think it's Joe Morton. Anyway, he was like, "You got to be better and smarter than all of them to get half of what they get."
Yeah.
Like one of
I
those
I feel like
things.
I've seen that in 10 movies.
It's, yeah,
though.
Exactly.
Like, you know, said in a different way.
Because it's true. Yeah. And it's just like, it's a, some people look at it as a burden. And when you're an artist, you're an entertainer, like it's definitely heightened. But I don't look at it as a burden, but it's something to kind of keep you in check. Like, am I cooning? Or am I like, am I like being disrespectful to my race? So it's like,
sometimes.
when you're like in the mainstream, I just the way that go ahead.
No, I should probably not say it.
Say it.
No, I was gonna say, you know, because there's like a couple of like people like working in the mainstream comedy in New York City who are like good black hosts, but they couldn't bring their act, you know, uptown, and the reason is because they're like. They're shitting on black people in front of a white audience.
Yeah, that's not right.
You know? And
No, dude, it's a thing because it's just like that. That's always a good litmus test for me because I like to perform for everybody. Like,
me
I
too.
Don't change my act. Like, it'll, you know.
I just change my act out. No.
Dude, no, I don't really. I don't really. There's certain references that they would probably get. I remember when I was at that show in Williamsburg. It was two shows. It was like in a courtyard, and I was talking about like black actors, and I was just saying like I says, oh, like that's the best, some of the best acting from a that was some of the best, like Morris Chestnut in The Best Man Holiday was some of the best non-slave acting I've seen in quite some time. And like there was this black couple there, and they were just like rolling over laughing. And then the white people there were like, "What is he saying?"
They're like, "Who's Morris Chestnut?"
Yeah, exactly. So like they got. So it's like every time, like it's just such a great fucking litmus test of,
right.
Am I on the right path, the path that I want to be on? Like, am I getting? Am I am I not? Am, you know, you're a fucking
Are you
clown.
Staying true to yourself
true to
and your family?
Yeah.
You know, could you, would your dad like look at that show and be like, hey, what the fuck are you doing, son?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So it was just kind of like, ugh. You know, you, so I like that. Like, there's kind of like a, there's kind of a fear, but it's lessened the more comfortable I've become with myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's like, and but it's just like, well, this is me. Like, I did a birthday party a couple years ago at this black fireman's house for his birthday.
Uh-huh.
And it was like middle-aged black people, and they loved me. And I was like, okay, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, right. It's just like, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's just one of those things. But how did you come up when you started? Like, what rooms were you playing when you...
I started like in Toronto, and I was just really doing like a few mics whenever I could. I remember I did a show at Yuck Yucks and I ripped, but it was, I was 19 and it was like garbagey shit, but ripped.
Yeah.
And then,
you line them. Okay.
And then, you know, the waitress like told my dad, she's like, wow, we're going to be seeing a lot of your son. And then my dad told me that, and that was probably the worst thing he could have said.
Your head got big.
Oh, it got so big. And I remember, like, not calling or following up, and then, like, 3 months later, like, calling Yuck Yucks and be like, hey, it's John Moses. Like, they've been waiting for my call. And they're like, what?
Like, who the fuck,
like,
are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I didn't get on that stage again for, like, another year, and I did some mics, and I was a very new comic. If I did comedy 4 times the first year I did it, I'd be surprised. So I really didn't get my chops together. I got my chops in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved out to Massachusetts, I wasn't very experienced. And I started doing shows there. And I was just doing wherever show I could get up. But when I moved to New York, I moved with one of my buddies from Massachusetts, my buddy Artie Robb. And I ended up rooming with him and Marshall Brandon. And those dudes, two black dudes, if you don't know them. And man, they fucked a lot of chicks in that house, in that apartment. The most chicks I've ever seen. The nice. Most chicks. That's how many they fucked, the most. But I was just doing shows that were like, they were doing a lot of like hood shit. So I would go with them and they'd be like, oh man, you're funny. And then I'd do a spot and they'd be like, hey. And I'd do that room a couple times and they'd be like, hey man, next week, $50 spot. Great. Next week, $100 spot. Oh, awesome. Next week, $150 spot. This is like in a 6 to 8 month span, right? And all of a sudden I'm like a working comic getting paid. And then I would go and do some mainstream, or not even mainstream, but like go to some goofball open mic room in Manhattan, and there'd be 6 people in the crowd, and it was horrible.
Judging you.
Horrible. And I'd be like, hey, can I get on this? And they're like, can you send me a tape?
Yeah.
We're booked up for the next 6 months. I'm like, yeah. Send you a tape? I don't want to do this now. And by this point, I was pretty good. Like, yeah. I had 20 minutes that I could really work, you know? Because I had lived in Massachusetts for 8 years, so... I spent 2 years doing in New York, my first 2 years here, doing a lot of urban rooms. And then I was sort of writing to that crowd a little bit and didn't want to become that comic.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to be like that white dude who can't do, you know, who's like, yeah, my dick's little, you know, and all that corny ass shit. So
that's cooning for white people.
It is. Yeah. It's exactly what it is. Yeah. And there's some people who do that. There's a few white guys that do that and they do well and they're never going to get out of that room and that. I just wasn't being like true to myself, you know, and I wouldn't want to perform that act in front of the guys I grew up with. They'd be like, yeah, you're an animal. What are you talking about? So, and then I just started. And now, like, the act I do here is I can do it just about anywhere.
Right.
You know, and I still do those rooms, but with less frequency. You know, if my friends call me and ask me to do them, I'll do them. But so that's that story. And we're running out of time.
Let's put a pin in it. Yeah. So we left off like, yeah, you hood rooms, you getting comfortable with stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel like performance-wise, that was a good move and a good development because you really learn how to perform in those rooms.
Yeah.
But, it gave me some bad habits and...
like what?
Not giving a fuck. No, that's not bad. No, but I just... Not hanging out in those, like, ulti fucking spots. Mm-hmm. You know, like, during those times... When I was hanging out in those rooms, like, those alt rooms were, like, making and breaking people, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like, there's a couple of years there where basically anybody, you know, hanging out at the Creek was, like, the Creek was 80% of the new faces at Montreal, you know? And they were really, for a couple of years, and I was, you know, I was going out there getting $100, $150, thinking I was doing the right thing, not having to work a day job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of these guys that weren't working day jobs were all of a sudden, you know, stars three years later, you know?
Yeah, That's true.
I think probably the worst habit is there is just not hanging out in mainstream rooms and clubs and feeling comfortable that way. But also, I think you get painted a certain way. I'm an aggressive dude anyway, you know, and I think like urban rooms are a lot, you know, they lend to that style, you know, they're because they're not put back by it, you know?
Yeah.
But then I, you know, I take that like male, that white, angry male aggression into these, like liberal Williamsburg-y audiences. Like you can be an aggressive, this is just my thinking, but like you can be an aggressive black dude and tell a story up there and they're like, you know what, he's got it rough, you know, because of like the police treatment, you know.
Yeah, but yeah,
if you're an aggressive white dude, they're just like, what do you got to complain about, buddy? Or you're at the top of the food chain.
Or if you're just talking about real shit.
I mean, oh yeah,
the
yeah.
last time I did a show at the Knitting Factory, I had a good time. I'm 36, you know. Yeah. I was just like talking about shit that was going on in my life, and
that's the other thing. They don't want to hear about my marriage or my baby or anything else.
Yeah,
you know, they want to hear about what fucking iPhone jokes. What great iPhone joke do you have?
But then a lot of them voted for Trump. If you look at that map, that map that they got floating around, like 58%. I don't know how much of it's true. But
that's because their fathers phoned them and said, if you vote for Hillary, I'm going to cut off your allowance.
I think I remember one of my a podcast that I like to listen to a lot is the Bill Burr's interview with Pete Holmes. Pete Holmes on You Made It Weird. Like they talk about there's hack in all of those rooms.
Oh, yeah.
Like the alt hack, the club.
That's fun. You know what? I haven't heard that. I would love to go and listen to that.
It's like from 2012. Like every now and then I'll go back and they kind of have like this discourse on the alt rooms and you just got to do all of them. But I think part of it's like you go where the love is, like where people
you
are putting
you
up.
Go where the love is, exactly. Yeah. Where your friends are and where you're comfortable. And I just didn't make a lot of friends in those circles. And dude, I'm like a guy who used to get in a ton of fights and play sports, and I'm a bit of a jock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like a nightmare to some of these guys.
Yeah,
I'm the reason they started doing comedy. They're like, this guy used to bully me.
But know? I feel like if we were kids, I mean, we're the same age pretty much. Yeah. I feel like I would have hung out with you.
Yeah, but you're also, you know, did a lot of sports and stuff. Yeah. And you're not a twerp.
Yeah, I think I was just like, when I was a kid, I was just, like, it was just, I was normal. Of course, you have your insecurities and all that shit.
Right, but right, right.
I hung out with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't just like, yeah, oh my
you know,
God.
And I'm from Canada. You just kind of hang out with, you just gravitate to guys who were doing what you were doing.
Yeah.
You know? And there was guys who played sports and you ended up hanging out with them, and guys who talked out the side of their mouth and you ended up hanging out with them. And, you know, there was, you know, you didn't hang out with the guys in the advanced classes or whatever. You just hung out with your people, you know?
I think comedy makes you, it kind of puts you in the situation with being in all different types of people.
It really does. Yeah. It really does give you a well-rounded perspective.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, but that's still like my
and
brother.
And that's not to say like there's some guys who do better in those rooms that I'm friends with.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And we can have a, you know, great time and a great conversation. I'm comfortable. But I'm just saying overall,
right,
I never got that comfortable there, you know?
Yeah. I just feel like
they don't want to hear a story about my mom getting punched out by her husband and then her drinking him to death. They're like, what?
But it's a funny story, though.
Yeah, and you know what? And it has done well in a couple of those rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, they're just like, oh, God.
And then sometimes I feel like,
you know, my buddy Kareem Green, you know Kareem?
Yeah.
He put it so great. He goes, John, like you're up here talking about real shit and like pain, and those people are from the land of milk and honey, you know, where everything's good. And when everything's good, you don't want to be necessarily reminded. You can't really relate to some of what is being said. So it's like, that's why observational humor goes over big in those situations, because like, you know, life is good, you know.
Yeah, but you don't have to cater to them. I think you
definitely
you do
not, right?
And I think a lot of times some audiences can be spoiled. Like you see some of the best comics in the country for free.
Yeah.
At these free shows working shit out. And I remember when Hannibal started that room at the Knitting Factory, that room isn't always a cakewalk.
No,
there's been big time comics that like get pissed off at that crowd. Like you can't, like, it's not easy. It's and it's like you have to.
Well, they you know, it's a very specific vein of humor that they go for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even comedy clubs will be much more open and accepting. You know,
yeah.
There it's insulated, you know?
Because even here, like even at Levity, it's a different organism every time you get up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
It's like, maybe it's dependent on the headliner. Maybe it's
some of
like,
that. Some of that's that. Like I, their crowd.
Yeah. So it just it depends. Like I, like when I opened for Hardwick, his crowds were totally different from what I, what my experiences are, and I could relate to them, and yeah. it ended up being pretty good. You
yeah,
know?
They love the Dawson's Creek bit.
I didn't have it back then.
Oh,
but,
then
but yeah, I think I remember one time I opened for him at the 930 Club, this rock club in DC, and I talked about how I made fun of him for like about comic book movies or something, but then I said like I understand you guys because when I was a kid I wanted to be in Boys to Men. I wanted to be an R&B singer, and then I saw Boys to Men in an Old Navy commercial, and it broke my heart. Like right. I talked about like that, so just like trying to bring like be relatable.
Sometimes all
in your
it takes is a couple of things to say to bridge the gap between you and whatever audience.
Yeah.
Like I'll
yeah.
go up in front of an audience that's predominantly 60-year-olds
mm-hmm.
in a casino or something, and you just got to find something to connect
yeah.
on. You know?
Yeah. And I think that's the fun in it though. Like it's almost like you think about you have to have that playbook running in your head. Well, I'm thinking about this, or maybe I should go this way. Because I heard, like, you're just reading a defense.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like that stuff that I'm
starting
now,
to get better at that stuff, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes just you know, this attitude works. Like, sometimes I'm just like, you know what? I don't give a fuck.
But you've been doing it a lot longer,
yeah.
though. So it's just sort of like today, like tonight, I'm hosting this weekend. And there was this girl.
By the way, if my
just,
voice is a little more hoarse than the first 40 minutes of this podcast, it's because I just was up on stage screaming for 20 minutes.
Yeah, you yelled at a girl for 20 minutes. Like, she yeah. was just like a chatty chick. Like, I was up there. I tried not to get in vice principal mode, but it was nothing. It's just nothing that got out of hand. And right before I brought you up, I was like, oh, this guy, check out his album. And then she like interrupted. I'm like, what are you doing? Like,
you know what? If the club recorded it and I can get the audio, I'll send you the audio.
Okay.
If you can put it on the end of it, like
I
a
might
bonus
do that.
Track.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's like, what do you? That'll challenge my editing skills.
Oh shit!
And it was just sort of like, what the fuck is going on? And then you went up there and just lit into her.
Yeah. And sometimes that can be dangerous, not dangerous, but risky because. You know, when you haven't established yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, as being likable or funny,
yeah,
you have to go entirely on knowing that the crowd hates her.
Yeah.
And I think they did at that point. They're like, we've had enough of you, dum-dum.
And did she like, she probably enjoyed that attention, though.
I think she did at first, and then at the end, she's like, okay, let it up. And I'm like, never. So, but yeah, but to speak to what you said, you know, I've been trying to be like a little more, you know what, let me try and tailor it a little because at the end of the day, it's like, and while staying true to myself, like it's mm-hmm. still my material, but it's like
yeah.
what material might work better in this situation
right.
that I have. And I think once you do that, it's like, well, then fuck you. I'm going to go and do whatever I want. But
yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's like we really, our jobs are to entertain these folks.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes they're paying upwards and not in these little shitty workout rooms in Brooklyn where it's a free show. It, mm-hmm. Really, then it's like, well, you know, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
But like tonight, these guys.
They paid.
They paid. Fuck, $20 a ticket.
Yeah.
And they're eating. Probably $100 a night out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're working hard, you know, they probably got a babysitter if they got kids.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this is the one night out this month that they're going to go. So we owe it to them to try to entertain them.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know what I was doing, I think, but the first show, you know how you try to say, oh, I'm not going too hard, am I? Like, I'm trying not to be, was that too dark? I was like, look, well, you guys paid to hear some real shit tonight. Like, I think I remember saying that in my early set.
Yeah.
And they want to hear, like,
yeah.
some real shit.
I think they want you to be authentic or you or the best you
mm-hmm. yeah no it's true
you
it's
know
true.
Like yeah. Yo, you're gonna hear some real shit tonight as long as you if that's you then that's fine. It's like I know a couple of comics are like, okay, now we're gonna get edgy and it falls flat
and
you know
like just do it like just do it instead of
well but they're not even that guy
yeah.
you know like they're trying to be something that they're not you know
mm-hmm. yeah
believe me you don't want to hear me do a 20-minute clean set. Yeah. First of all, I can't. And then, but, you know, secondly, it's not what I do. There's people that are better at that than me.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of the scariest situations. Like, it's like I'm not a dirty comic, but sometimes I could curse. I was opening for, emceeing for Henry Cho, this, like, then, who's a clean comic out of Nashville. And I did fine. Like, I did well. And he's like, oh, you want to do more time? I was like, ah. I was like, I don't know.
What are you, like 30, 40 seconds?
Just like scared because, you know, you don't want to. It's just that thing is just kind of hanging over your head that you're worried about. Like,
sometimes it's better to say no.
Yeah, I just said, no, I'm good. I don't want to. It's your show. I don't want to stretch out anymore. But
meanwhile, he's thinking like, oh, I don't want to do. I don't got any more than this either.
Nah, he's cool. He's a shit. That dude's a vet.
Oh.
What's it?
Nothing.
Like a shitty bowl game.
Yeah, no, just interception in the end zone. All right, I gotta get going. I think, man.
All right, man. Well, let's. We'll have to have you back on.
Yeah, this is a great conversation. Dude, like, I like the fact that we kind of went wherever with it.
Yeah.
And we touched on some topics that I wasn't prepared to talk about, but don't really get a chance to talk about. Definitely on a podcast, you know, like it was real. You know, this was like a real car ride conversation. You know?
Yeah, talk about your one mo minute.
Yeah, because that's like the thing I'm most excited about right now. I do like a weekly, like a 1 minute, 1 to 2 minutes. It's never 2 minutes. I was trying to keep it within a minute, but it's difficult. But it's like a 1 minute, like a tight joke fest on rant on a topic.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like. Like a monologue on something up front, but
no, it's okay.
But it's filthy. I'm good.
Let's go. I'm good too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Shout out to Laura.
Laura, what's up, girl?
What's up, girl?
So it's a minute. It's on my Facebook fan page, which you can find at Comedian John Moses. If you go on Facebook, Comedian John Moses, and I've been doing it since June. So there's I don't know how many weeks, 30 of them or something like that.
About 6 months.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like anti-Trump stuff.
Okay.
It was heavy. And then he won. And I was like, all right, I guess I better back off that. But so you can check that out. And, you know, both my albums, Upper Middle Trash and On the Edge, you can go to iTunes and get them if you want. But if you've got Spotify or Pandora, just add me to your channels and they'll start rolling through there. This year's Upper Middle Trash, Raw Dog on Sirius. They released a top 10 list. I did not make the top 10 on that list, but they gave me an honorable mention. They said, "Oh yeah, by the way, John Moses is a real dude."
That's a good album.
And my first album was on a top 10 list on Laugh Spin many years ago. So,
yeah, I'm gonna have to consult you about that album stuff.
Yeah, and listen, I'm happy to. I'm always happy. People actually call me about that because that's the one area where I have a little bit of knowledge. So yeah, I'd be happy to help.
You got two of them.
Right. And both of them are pretty good.
Yeah. John Moses, thanks so much for hanging,
man. Yo, thanks, dude. I'd love to do it again.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.